Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Serena Garland is the co-founder and co-CEO of global outdoor pizza oven brand company, Uni. She's passionate about developing people, community, growing world-class teams and authentic partnerships. And she's known for her extreme positivity. She champions culture and the experience of the team and their network. And Uni's aim is to encourage everybody, everywhere, to make pizza. And she joins us today on this week's Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Very excited to talk to you because being an owner of an Uni, it's a fantastic story and we want to talk to you about that. But I wanted to kick off by asking a very obvious question. What's your favourite pizza?
Oh, thank you. Great start. It's either the first or last question on most podcasts. But yeah, it's an important thing. I mean, I am obsessed with chilli, so something like very hot. Veggie and spicy, that is my way forward with pizza.
Can I ask you an unusual question and say, what's your least favourite pizza? Or do you have one?
I am not a fan of pineapple on pizza. But
it's an eternal question.
It's incredibly controversial. We've made quite a lot of campaigns around it. In fact, we've created Hawaiian pizza day and done lots of fun things around it because it does divide people so much, doesn't it? But I am not judgmental about it. I just don't really like it. Each their own. Pizza's for everyone, right?
Absolutely. And what was one of the things we want to talk about is actually the beauty of particularly of the product that of Uni is that you have that communal cooking and eating experience, which is so lovely. And I know something that's obviously kind of flourished during the last few years. But tell us a bit about the Uni story. How did you start? Because am I right in thinking it was a kind of a Kickstarter project to start with?
Yes, exactly. It was, so this in November, it'll be our 10-year anniversary, or universary as we call it. so dodgy. We launched Uni on Kickstarter in November 2012, and it was actually one of the very first Kickstarters in the UK. Prior to that, you couldn't actually launch a Kickstarter unless you had a US bank account. So what was great about that is that it was a really beautiful testing platform, and even though we were in the UK, it meant we had a sort of global audience from day one. But yeah, that's what happened. And there's so many good things that came from that Kickstarter in the sense that, well, sort of test the concept, as I mentioned. Straight away, you're an e-commerce community, an e-commerce business rather. You build a community from day one where you need to have really authentic dialogue with them, with your backers. They are backers, so they win if you win. It's quite a nice way to think about kind of relationships with people who are supporting your product, is actually support rather than consumers. And then, yeah, we also got loads of love and free press from the back of it, where people were like, oh, how much for like $200 or $300 for a pizza oven? And they didn't even think about that before. And great pizza at home, and, you know, all the angles in. So gifts and foodies and, you know, just brilliant pastimes, that fun things to do together. So it was a good start. It was a really good start, even though it was a very modest campaign by, you know, any standards that we've gone on to do since, or, you know, that looking at those platforms today.
And a lovely idea as well, kind of the whole kickstarting idea is just great, isn't it, in terms of entrepreneurship. If someone's got an idea, you know, who wants to back it, who wants to get involved, and like you say, that kind of whole team effort, which I think is I think got lost for a while, didn't it? It got lost for kind of decades of just kind of this triangular sort of top-down idea of sort of business, and only certain people who've got the funding or the backing straight away could actually go and develop an idea. But, you know, projects like that have just totally kind of made that really horizontal and made everyone feel part of something and have ownership over something, which I think is really important.
Yeah, it's a much more fluid way to start a business, for sure. And experimental and creative and open, like you say. So yeah, we're very, very grateful that the timing correlated. And Christian was my husband who had the original idea. He sort of was geeking out over Kickstarter ideas and beforehand, so sort of knew this was coming up. Yeah, it's good.
And where did that idea come from? So you said he obviously had the idea, but where did it come from? Was it one of those moments where he was running or something and suddenly kind of this idea just came to his head, or what happened?
I would say it percolated, but we had a creative education business called Sukla back in the day, and we started that in 2007, and that was all about innovation and creativity within school communities and working a lot with young people and teachers to design the future of education. It was a very fun place to be working and or area to be working in. So I guess the segue from one bit to the other was that we often said that creativity is problem solving, and Christian's problem was that he could only make good pizza. The context was we were both working part-time, we'd had our first baby, Oscary, and we were sort of sharing childcare, so he had a little bit more time. Doesn't feel like it when you've got a newborn in a business, but by today's standard, we definitely had some time. And he got into making pizza. And it just was okay. It was good. It was nothing like you get in Naples or in a pizzeria even down the road in London where we lived at the time. And he was frustrated by that. So, yeah, he has definitely got entrepreneurial DNA. His parents both run businesses, and their parents before them back in Finland where he's from. And actually, specifically, his mum and dad ran a supermarket, and his mum ran the bakery within that supermarket. So he's got that business side, but also kind of a baker's mindset. I think I'm a great cook, but I'm much more like throw things together and, you know, creative, and I'm not really a recipe person. But if you're baking, it's a science, right? So Christian got quite good, wanted to make it better, and then worked out quickly that in order to do that, you need a very high heat, which is sort of key to great pizza. And you couldn't do that with a domestic oven. So looked at what was on the market. There was only really expensive installations, maybe £1,500 upwards. We were renting, very small back garden, didn't have the money or the space. And so he was like, I can't believe this doesn't exist. I will build it. And that's what happened.
Wow. And that's where all the best things come from, isn't it? A bit of passion, a bit of curiosity, and then the need. And often it's a need that we have ourselves, actually, that we then share with other people.
Totally, exactly. It was, we'd like this for our family. And then it was kind of like, if we want it, let's see what else is out there. And that's why the platform, the crowdfunding platform, is a really cool way to start, because like, let's just see. And I think since that day, we've been running to keep up with the interest and the passion people have for pizza. And yeah, it's been very fun.
Yeah, and would it be fair to say the last few years in particular, it's sort of ballooned even more?
Definitely it is fair. We were very fast growth from our outset, and actually we've been doing some kind of deep dive into the business today, and like, you know, we've always been profitable. We've always been making big orders and thinking that we're being incredibly ambitious and then having, like I say, to chase that, you know, to catch up with the demand. But absolutely, in the last couple of years, like the pandemic definitely accelerated our growth. So we've always been very ambitious and think we're going to be a global brand and, you know, be a household name. And we still think that. So that hasn't changed. But I'd say the trajectory has, we've maybe sped forward 3 years in terms of what the pandemic did. Obviously, you've got COVID right now, Radha. It's been horrific. I definitely wish it didn't happen. But in terms of uni being something that, like, authentically safe to do with your small group of friends or family outside and food related, I mean, it sort of ticks a lot of boxes, doesn't it? Because people were learning new skills and everyone got into sourdough. And remember that crazy banana bread?
Not literally.
Into sourdough. Yeah. But yeah, it was, we didn't have to like shoehorn this thing in and go, oh, you need this in your life. People were, you know, what can we do now? You know, restaurants were closed and people wanted good food still. They wanted something to do. And uni is incredibly, you know, Giles, because you've got one, but it's very experiential. Yeah. So there's something beautifully primal about cooking with fire and then cooking, like making things with your hands, and everyone can join and the children can put the toppings on it. You know, so yeah, it kind of wrote itself in terms of people going, this is good. They liked it. They told their friends. And we've been very lucky to be able to grow during this pretty dark time for humanity. So very mixed bag there. But in terms of the how it sped it up, it definitely did. Yeah.
And it sounds like it really kind of filled that gap. Like you say, during the pandemic, when we were all isolating or isolated from other people, when there wasn't that sense of community, when normally we would have been like, right, I'll meet you down the local pizzeria or whatever, you know, for dinner on a Friday night. Actually, we were then saying, you know, hey, come over to my garden, let's cook together. So there are a lot of things that we all remembered during the pandemic, like, you know, the importance of cooking and creativity and time for our friends and family in nature. And it seems like that really filled all of those kind of gaps and really kind of made people think about what they were doing with their lives and what was important and what they missed as well. You know, how much more satisfying potentially it was to sit there and actually create something yourself for friends or for your family and to eat what you've made with your own hands out in your garden rather than being served up on a plate in a restaurant where you don't really know where it's come from.
There's nothing better than that kind of getting together over food and pizza. I mean, I think it's the ultimate food because it's made for sharing. It's very informal. So like, remember when it used to be that dinner parties were all the rage and, you know, they're come back and people still like dinner parties, but it's just like a more lower key, more informal connection over food, like you say. Our original kind of mission for uni was connecting people with exceptional food experiences. And I think that still really stands, like, and actually, you know, when you're cooking by yourself with your small family, say, or a little group of flatmates who ever lived together, there was still the opportunity during the last couple of years to connect and share stuff online. And like that really helped as well, that you were, you know, we did days where everyone cooked together in the office and then shared that just our team in the office. And then we did it with our wider sort of Facebook and social communities and created sort of moments around that where you felt still part of things. But yeah, so many ways to look at connection, but it's been part of our kind of company DNA from the beginning because we recognise how important that is beyond pizza.
It's going to sound like a very strange question, and maybe there's a simple answer, but I'm always really fascinated as to why human beings, why food is so related to connection and why we tend to enjoy food more when we're with other people. Do you think it's the whole sort of rigmarole and the kind of whole ceremony of making food and sharing with other people? Or what do you think that's about?
Oh, I think everyone will have a unique take on this, but yes, absolutely. The ceremony of making it and sort of putting thought into it. With pizzas, there's a nice thing, like it's so fast to cook a pizza on an uni, but you could really geek out over the ways you create the dough, right? It could take 5 days to prove if you want it. It can be,
oh yes,
you know, like your hydration levels and the salt levels and the, is it sourdough, is it fresh yeast, is it dry yeast? You know, there's so much you can do there. I think, yeah, you know, it's you eat with more than your stomach, right? It's about how you feel during that time, And like with uni at the moment, when you're cooking outdoors, there's also that the fire, like I say, the primal stuff. And there's like, oh my gosh, the wow moment of you've cooked this and it's literally 60 seconds and you've got this amazing creation. And so people, it's that's a, one thing that we really sort of want to try and communicate more. If you're not seeing a live demo, it's like, oh wow, how is that that quick? People don't really believe it. So yeah, the question about why people feel more connection over food, because it like ticks so many senses, doesn't it? You know, there's memories with like your first bite of pizza, for example, because you remember the school dinner one you had when you were a kid and your first taste of pizza in Italy. And like, you know, it's but yeah, I think it's that kind of multi-layered take on eating. I am such a big foodie. I don't know even know where to start with that question.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, for me, food is love. So anyone who feeds me, I'm totally loyal to forever and eternity. So I think there's something about that, isn't there? There's something about, you know, like you say, getting the ingredients in, preparing it, kind of putting time and effort into giving pleasure to someone that you love and someone you care about, and then seeing them enjoy that food. Is something really special. And I think also, for me anyway, when you're eating with someone and you're having that lovely kind of long experience of someone coming over and, you know, starting to talk about what's been happening to them, you have that space and time to talk about what really matters to you, maybe what's happened to you that day or that week. And there's a real sense of time, you know, that we don't often give ourselves. You know, sometimes we're in, we're out, we have a quick chat with someone, whereas food, because we have to process it, eat it, enjoy it as a kind of social thing, as an event, maybe it gives us more space to actually connect properly and meaningfully with that person as well.
Yeah, there's the like punctuation, isn't there, the natural parts of a meal, of like the rigmarole and the sitting down and togetherness. I think that's a really interesting take, for sure. Yeah, stopping in a way is important to do. And meals usually mean you stop, unless in sad times where you're like eating at your desk without thinking, or eating in front of TV without thinking, you know, that you didn't even notice. But when you actually make an event of something, then you do slow down, which is clearly important for everyone at the moment.
Yeah, you have to digest, literally.
Literally, yeah.
Literally digest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, one of my favourite days out recently was going round to my friend Tom's house, and he's also got the same uni I have, and just three of us, me and my best mate Dave, and who's also got an uni, just us three of us, kind of, one of us had made the dough, and then someone had bought the different toppings, and just having that afternoon together, just, you know, cooking a pizza, eating it, putting another one in, you know, and also, like you said, that kind of almost backsnapping, like, yes, look, yours looks amazing, you know, like the kind of like, maybe it's three boys together, like being competitive, but there's that wonderful joy of seeing that perfect pizza coming out and then consuming it. But like you say, and it's kind of something very primal about that as well, because of the way you cook it. But yeah, just so such a beautiful moment. I think it was really special, actually. And I think that's great about, you know, uni and like you say, pizzas in general, because they are kind of things that you can share.
Yeah, absolutely. We had so many nice things that kept us going the last couple of years, where people were like, I've now got this tradition with my grown-up son, you know, every Friday night we come together. And like the people going, you know, we didn't really talk before, but there's some, you know, like that way where you can talk really well to people if you're on a road trip and you're both looking the same way. Yeah. Mm. It's a bit like that, I think, when you're it's like you've got something to do that takes a bit of attention, that's really quite magic, and then you can have a connection a different way. But those, oh my goodness, they get me in my soul, because it's hard. I'm not doing a good job of communicating that, but you know what I mean, this like a magic moments that people now then have as a rhythm to their lives and a new way to talk to their son. I was like, whoa, great, so nice.
And yeah. And also nice, I guess, in the world we live in now with social media and stuff, people can share that with you guys. You guys can see that, you know, you can see that happening, and people can share their stories and their moments.
It's both that, isn't there? There's both that people, because they really do, like pizzas are shareable in every way. Like they take pictures of them. We were just actually in another meeting saying there's almost like you get the kind of level of obsession you might get for wine or for coffee, you know, like real yeah. coffee experts. But coffee's not that shareable on social media, whereas like, there's a bit of, like, not that there's not skill to like coffee art or whatever, but you wouldn't necessarily snap a picture of that. But people do snap pictures of their Rooney's creations. But then on the other flip side, it's a really analog thing to do, to make a pizza. So it's kind of like non-digital as well. So you're just having an authentic experience that you can, you know, like, which is a rare thing. You don't need to take a picture of it, but yeah, there's both sides.
The other thing I love about pizza, not just the creativity, like you say, you can kind of go really fancy or you can go really basic. But the other thing I love is because it's circular, you can really have those really complex discussions about what should you just halve it and do like one half of this ingredient, the other half a different one, or quarter it, or what's going to happen with that whole circular clock face arrangement of the pizza. I actually made a pizza with a friend of mine a few weeks ago. I haven't got an uni yet, but I will get one. But it took me back to school when I, you know, I think I've only ever made a pizza once before at school. And we had that same discussion. So should we put the same ingredients over all of it? Or we can do half and half? Like what's the vibe here? And I think there's a little bit of sense of fun, a little bit of sense of individuality, and probably a bit of naughtiness, maybe putting a bit of pineapple when that other person's not looking on top of the pizza. Now, obviously, so you mentioned that I think your husband's from Finland originally, is that right? And you're Scottish. And obviously pizza is Italian. Well, I think it is anyway. Who knows about the origins of pizza? I'm assuming it's Italian. So what's your take on sort of different cultures in their relationship with food across the world, and how maybe different cultures treat food and treat kind of people eating together, and what food means to them? Because I'm really fascinated. I mean, one of the things I love about traveling is that you go and you explore and you taste the food and you find out new dishes. But also I'm really fascinated by the way that that particular country or culture treats food and treats eating together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's revered everywhere. I was thinking about a trip to Japan and like learning about tea ceremonies and like, yeah, the like absolutely beautiful approach to preparation and, you know, and the respect given to food. So the question generally, it's a really interesting one. We're here in Scotland, we've got teams in America, and of course you've got New York pizza, and that take and that relationship with Italy is really fascinating. And, you know, ultimately, if we talk about pizza specifically, it was made for incredibly poor people, a meal that was easy and cheap to make and very inclusive. And I think that's really beautiful. And when you talk to proper Italians, we have lots of Italians in our team now. We have a tiny office in Napoli and work with the AVPN, who is the official kind of guide for true Neapolitan pizza. So we're really happy to kind of have a collaboration with them. And mostly it's about wood fire. It's about authentic ingredients that, you know, if you're going for a truly Neapolitan style. And then it's, you know, beyond that, it's like, how do other cultures work with that? Because that's authentic too, you know, all the Italians in New York and how that started. And of course, we've got Detroit now. And I think it's when we started, we tended to have like some of our team would be, you know, making a New York style in England. And now we're like, well, actually, why don't we try and get as paired back as connected to the real stories to learn. It doesn't mean that anyone can't make a good New York, for example, but let's look at what matters to that, the original. Is it like, there's lots of chat about how important New York water is in the dough, right? And is that true? And then you investigate that. It's really fascinating. So the stories around food are the things that draw me in, as well as, of course, great taste and the differences. There's a lot of books written. We're actually writing a book about, again, ourselves, about kind of the origins and the stories and the culture behind just different types of pizza. But you could go on in so many directions. And the main thing is that there's a great acceptance about pizza and ways in. And also what I love, love, love about it is that even the professionals don't ever think they've perfected it. I like, you know, there's a real learning journey with, if you've got an uni, Giles, you know, like you can mess up pizzas. You definitely do. I still do. and you can get your proof slightly wrong, overproof, underproof, too little salt. You know, it's a journey. Even when the pizza is really, really good, you don't think, I've nailed this. So there's that kind of that quest that you can never quite complete, but you're always trying. And it's a real craft, which is, you know, whether you're a beginner or a professional, you believe that. And there's a lot of passion in that community, which is infectious, I think.
Now, again, this might be a stupid question, but do you know which country eats the most pizzas?
Oh, I should know this. I mean, I'm going to guess it's USA, but do you know the answer?
Yeah. No, I don't know the answer at all, actually.
I do know some fun stats in terms of, like, you know, people who make the most pizzas from scratch is in the US. But I don't know. I don't know. I would guess it's America.
I think you're probably right.
Population-wise. But yeah.
I'm just fascinated by how you say, like, across the world, I think universal to every single culture is that kind of sense of wanting to eat together, and sort of food being very much a part of family life, of big events, of big life events. You know, whenever we think about, you know, weddings, or we think about celebratory events, we tend to always think about food, don't we? There's always an element of food in there as part of a sort of a communal celebration. So it's just really interesting how food, like you were talking about memories, you know, food can really mark some very important memories in our lives and what's happened to us. And it can also do the opposite, where we associate a particular food with something that's happened to us and we never ever want to have it ever again. I'm thinking about Branston Pickle for me, because that reminds me of having horrible sandwiches when I was at school for school lunches that used to make me feel really sick. And now I open a jar of Branston Pickle and I'm like, oh no, I can't go there. So it's really fascinating how our brains are really sensitive to food, and food in relation to memories, I think, as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking my Branston Pickle is Lilt, you know, that drink.
I
like Lilt as well.
I'm sure it's delicious, but I was sick in the car when I was a kid and I had that. And now I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, those associations. I mean, I think actually, I was thinking my kid's quite spoiled, because obviously we've got an uni, we can make fresh pizzas. And actually we've made fresh pizzas even before the uni. But when I was a kid, it was just like we used to get those frozen pizzas from the supermarket, which were about this sort of big. Not very good for our listeners to hear me doing a picture, but very small. Yeah, really small. And they were kind of set, they were wrapped in plastic, and they were just really horrendous. They had little holes in the bottom where they, I think, and they were just so gross. And I was thinking, actually, it's really lucky now that we have got, you know, access, and we're more, I don't know, willing to try out new things with our, you know, with feeding, particularly when we're feeding our children, and maybe that's a good thing as well. Things like, you know, making a fresh sourdough. You know, I bought my wife a starter recently, which she's been looking after and feeding. And it's quite a complex process, but it's really enjoyable at the end. You know, you make a pizza out of it and you've got this wonderful thing. And yeah, it feels like good that we've got access to these things now.
Yeah, and it's lovely, isn't it, because it's both feels like, oh, now we have access to it, but it's an incredibly ancient tradition, right?
Yeah.
So it's like something like getting back to those ways of being. And like, there's you know, you probably noticed as well, there's all this like pickling and fermentation is really trendy just now, and that's like a fascinating process. I have tried and killed my kombucha a couple of years ago. There's an explosion in my earring cupboard, but you know, I'm busy. I'm not sure I was meant
dedication to the cause.
I'm not sure I'm meant to be a kombucha mom, but my kids are fine, so that's good.
Now, you mentioned that obviously you've grown exponentially over the last few years. Has that been a tricky thing to sort of try and deal with? Because obviously you've got a goal, you've set your sights on what you want to be, where you want to be, and that if that's sped up, sometimes it's, you know, it's hard to kind of keep up with that. And and obviously you've become more global as well. Has that been a difficult transition?
I think that it's miraculously not that difficult, and looking back on it, it's not that we've stopped being in this mad period, because it's still growing quickly, but the major thing that I'm grateful for is that we had really strong core values at uni, and their ambition, kindness, passion, rigor, and innovation. And particularly the kindness one was like a complete beacon during, you know, the team onboarding new people remotely and the culture that we already had. I talk about this a little bit, where it couldn't be about us, me or Christian or the exec team or, you know, the leadership. It had to be completely taken on by the whole staff. And at the start of the pandemic, we had about 50 people. And now we've got about 280. So the vast majority of the growth has been during this time, like you say, we've got a US office in Texas, we've got a German office, we've got an office in China, and we definitely have, it's been a bit of a leveler really, because we've done a lot on Zoom. We were able to pivot, and luckily we're already e-commerce business, so we didn't have to change tack too much. But yeah, the culture, I think, and the onboarding helped us feel connected as a community, as did this like Zoom life. So where you might have had the Scottish office being the HQ and then the American office maybe feeling a bit second fiddle, the way that we all had our Monday huddles, you know, together, and we continue to do that, I think has actually been beneficial in connecting us and making us feel like a truly global balanced team. So I am a very positive person, so tend to look at the goods, but I genuinely do think it's been pretty beautiful to watch. And one of my proudest things, apart from the kind of growth of Uni, is about how the team feels. So our employee net promoter score, we did it recently, a big deep dive, and it was something like 76, which is off the charts in terms of happiness. You know, the vast majority of people are incredibly, incredibly happy to be here, and the kind of couple of points off, it tends to be things that are really, really tiny, but they feel very connected. They feel connected to the culture and therefore part of something. So long answer, but actually, I don't think it has been that hard. I think it's been fast, and we're probably quite good at reacting. What we need to learn to do is slow down and go, okay, with a clear strategy and a goal, and to make different types of decisions in a world that's post lockdown. But I believe we can do that. Lucky, I think, is the overwhelming feeling, honestly.
Well, I think that's important, but you're instilling a level of connection and I think kindness, you said, and that's so important in society anyway. I think then, you know, that's the best way you can move forward, isn't it? If you've got those core values are in place.
Mm-hmm.
And kindness in business is something that I've kind of read quite a lot about recently, where, you know, we sort of think of business as being quite cutthroat, and especially if you're building an empire, then it is a lot of, you know, a lot of people see it, or people's perceptions of it is being like cutthroat and nasty and all that kind of stuff, where actually you get much more out of people if you just treat them with a bit of, empathy and kindness and have that connection between one another.
Yeah, it's like I'm seeing it more and more in a good way, where certainly businesses know here in Scotland and elsewhere understand exactly the same way as us. If you're lovely to your community and your team, it's only net positive. You know, be people focused. Our customer happiness is our North Star metric, and I think it's really important. Along with revenue, we can grow. You actually think about that, but people talk quite a lot actually to us about, you know, when you grow from 30 to 50 people in business, that's when you lose the culture. You can't retain it. And because of, I think, our background in education and being in lots of different schools and seeing really good cultures and really messed up cultures, depend quite a lot on leadership and trust and autonomy and all of those things. We prioritised the importance of culture up there with the product as we grew Uni. And I think it's reaped the benefits. So we just sort of refused to believe that we would lose that as we grew, because we prioritised it, much like, you know, you have to work at things. So that's what we did. And I'm very glad we did, because by the time that struck, we had it bedded in such a way that it was authentically with the whole team, that it wasn't about us carrying it, because we couldn't. It was about the rest of the team, and it, you know, snowballs in a good way.
It's also about if you instill that and you have that sense of making people feel valued, then actually when busy periods happen, like during the pandemic, and when things can potentially get stressful, and people can potentially lose that sense of team and teamwork and good faith, then actually if you've got that already in there, you're more resilient, aren't you, to actually be able to handle those stresses and challenges and to be
to
kind of come out the other side.
100%. And also, like, I definitely learned it's important not just to be a cheerleader, but also to like stop and call out those moments where it's really hard and acknowledge them. That's definitely a learning for me to do just generally. It's like I used to be like, come on, it's okay. And, you know, versus so many other people were doing well, and it almost, that's true, but it's not everyone's truth. Like, you know, we had people who were by themselves for the majority of time in a small flat, you know, or whatever. They've lost loved ones. And so it's you're right though, knowing that there's this foundation of people that actually care about the whole human is really, I think, has been really helpful. And it's an easy thing to do. Like before the pandemic, from a long time in the business, we've had this, so passion is one of our values, but we've got a passion fund at work. So we employ people via those values. Like, we want diversity, but we would need that alignment. But we're really interested in what sparks people up. So we give people £500 to spend on their passion every year. And it shouldn't be anything to do with uni necessarily. If you want pizza trading, we'll do that separately. Or, you know, but people have done, you know, yoga retreats, to trips to New York, to, I don't know, like fashion courses, to just things that like spark them, spark joy, buying running shoes, whatever it is. Because then you've got, they can see that you're invested in the whole person and you make time for a work-life balance and you value that. And, you know, and we don't want people to come in and just be like, it's all about work, because it's not sustainable, you know. So we care. We've always had a decent work-life balance. It's a bit busy just now, but made sure that we do that and stop. And I think having kids in the business probably helped us think like that. Probably the fact Christian's from Finland would be an influencer there. They have quite a different, I would say, approach to working hours and balance and like going outside and all of those things that I think everyone in the UK could learn from, but certainly in the US they could learn from. You know, we had to convince our US team to take holidays when we gave them, like, please take them, it's good for you. Wow. You can get your head will be better, therefore you'll be better for the business if you're relaxed, you know. Like, it's not just us being like altruistic, we definitely want you to stop sometimes. So culturally it's really fascinating to see how people approach time.
Yeah,
bit like pizza, if you get your base right, everything else goes well.
Well said, exactly.
I don't know anything about pizza, but I reckon that's true.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful metaphor for life. You're right.
That was interesting. I was thinking, it was only recently that I realised, like America, they don't have kind of proper paid holidays. You know, it's all, it's a fun, strange system.
They do if they work for uni, but yeah, like honestly, and like things like they count sick days as holidays because that's the way you can take it. It's honestly so sad. You know, just absolutely mad.
It's really fascinating though, isn't it? Like you say about the whole kind of the variety of sort of work ethic across different countries and cultures and how much it impacts, you know, our mental health, our well-being, but also that business. Also, like you say, how efficiently you can work within that business, retention of staff, you know, burnout, all of those things. And it doesn't, I mean, I've done quite a lot of stuff around work and mental health and mental health in the workplace. And it still shocks me how, you know, some employers don't really get that basic message of the fact that if you need to look after people and value them and have that balance to get everyone benefits. And it strikes me as all these little things, like people not providing free tea and coffee, for example, you know, the impact of that on how someone feels and how much of a team they feel, I think, is immense. And yet there's this kind of real emphasis on short-term psychology of like, oh, we don't want to bother getting tea bags, so let's just leave it. But it's like, no, that has a huge impact. Can't you understand?
It's so funny. Those things like are absolutely obviously second nature, and like naturally you would do that. And we have, you know, free ingredients for pizza and like £1,000 a year to spend on uni gear because we want people to be cooking. And but what I actually liked was we have people from loads of different sectors come in to work at uni now, and some a lady turned up and she was like, oh, where do I leave the money for the tea and coffee? And it was like, oh, actually, that's so sweet, because my parents both worked in education, and I worked in education when I was at like summer jobs. And of course, like, people had their names on the milk and, you know, you paid. And I was just like, oh, it's quite sweet to kind of not take those things for granted. And just different perspectives for how it should be. But to your point, absolutely, like, making people's lives at work comfortable and easy. And it's pennies, isn't it? And it's reaps the rewards, because I think we should always have a generous outlook to looking after people and to business generally. There's a lot of power when you're an employer, and society, right? You can make a good job. Mm. I think it was, there's a guy called Tom Hunter, Sir Tom Hunter, in Scotland, who's a big philanthropist, and he was like, the best thing you can do for society is to make good jobs. And I was like, yeah, that's yes. it. You know, people and have
it,
value.
Wasn't he involved in Children in Need? Doesn't he get involved?
Probably.
I think so. Yeah,
not sure. Yeah. I'm sure he does. Yeah. He's I think he was Scotland's first billionaire, and this gives a big percentage to entrepreneurial businesses but and education. But yeah, I'm sure lots of charities. He's a goodie.
Business for good.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, this podcast is called Things I Forgot Were Good For Me. And I have a feeling you might say pizza if I ask you that question. But what is one thing or a couple of things that you want to kind of put out there in terms of what we once knew, maybe when we were small and growing up, but gradually has got squeezed out from our consciousness? What thing would you like people to remember that might be good for them, that they could kind of incorporate into their day-to-day lives?
I think making, generally, so to the pizza point, absolutely, like the slowing down and the kind of art of making anything is something that we do a lot when we're little. And also to the pizza point, you don't have to be a perfectionist, right? You shouldn't be, in fact. You should be aiming to try hard, but just being happy with the journey. One thing I definitely am grateful for during the last couple of years has been, you know, being refined to one area and having to really explore and look differently at nature and surrounding lands. And I feel incredibly lucky that we were in Scotland, and we were doing, first I was like, oh, the same old farm track roads, and now I'm like, wow, like stopping. And it reminded me, when I was a kid, I used to go to Ireland with my brother and my mum, and we went on special walks with my granddad, and he would like stop and we would pick flowers, and we had dog was there, and you know, just he literally put the word special in front of it, and it was just a walk. And I started to feel a little bit like that during lockdown, where I noticed stuff and I took my own kids and our own dog and slowed down and explored, like in snow or in rain or in wind or in sunshine, like just how things looked, and stopped being on my phone. And I really needed that respite, because I'm amazed all the people had all this time during lockdown. I don't know about you, but I definitely had less time, and I was in Zooms calls back to back, and it was just not healthy. And stopping and going, the sort of power of nature and walking and those special walks is something that I think was, I didn't really remember, and now I would not be without. So,
well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been so great to talk to you, and yeah, I'm just a big fan. Thanks for making such a great pizza oven, which I get, you know, we use quite regularly, like at least once a week it comes out. So yeah, we love having it.
It's true. I've seen Giles's photos on social media, and they look amazing. They look so delicious.
I'll need to check them out. I haven't seen your pictures. I'm very happy that you've got them. And yeah, Radha, hit me up. I can sort you out if you're interested. And thank you so much for talking to me and for making a podcast about cool things. I've listened to a few of them now. They're really, really lovely. I'm very grateful that you've asked me to be involved.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
All right.
Thank you.
Happy weekend when it gets to you.
So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.